It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, investigative reports found hazardous conditions at 3 barrel recycling plants in the Milwaukee area earlier this year. We'll find out where inspections of the plants stand today.
Now, the country seems deeply divided over after violence broke out between white supremacists and counter-protesters in Charlottesville. The president commented on it more than once, but his remarks yesterday have been some of his most controversial.
And after the violence, the debate over Confederate statues has been revived again.
Share your thoughts on the president's comments in about Charlottesville at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Let us know what you think of his response to what happened over the weekend and the response to his response from Democrats and Republicans.
Scott Wong joins us to recap that and more for today's Look at the Week in Washington. He's a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he focuses on Paul Ryan and House Republicans. Scott, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the president appeared to return to his initial position on Charlottesville yesterday, where he said that there are people on the what he called the alt-left who share the blame. Here he is.
You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
Scott, tell us a little bit about how the president's remarks have been digested. What's the reaction been?
I think there's been a lot of shock on the part of Republicans. You know, this story has evolved over the course of 3 or 4 days. The president weighed in initially on Saturday after the violence broke out in Charlottesville and maintained that both sides there were elements of both sides to blame for the violence. And then a day later, he sort of walked it back and read a prepared remark that said, you know, it was very clear there was no place in his party, in the country, for white supremacists, for neo-Nazis, etc. That seemed to have quieted the storm in his party for a bit. And then, of course, yesterday he was right back at it with a very lengthy, combative press conference in Trump Tower back in New York, where he reverted back to his original position, maybe even going a step further, saying both sides, the white supremacists or the white nationalists, as well as the counter-protesters, were to blame for the violence that broke out in Charlottesville that left one woman dead, and of course, sadly, two state troopers lost their lives monitoring that situation.
And Scott, what is the thinking behind the president's remarks yesterday? As you said, it seemed as though the storm had kind of quieted down, and then he made these remarks yesterday. They seemed, some people have said they were unscripted and the White House didn't know they were coming. Is that true? Do we know if these were planned remarks or what the nature of them was?
Well, he originally had planned to talk about infrastructure. He had members of his economic team, cabinet members, Elaine Chao and a number of others with him on that day at Trump Tower. It was not supposed to be, I believe, a long press conference. He was going to say a few remarks and then go back upstairs. But obviously, he could not help himself when reporters started asking questions. He's somebody who likes to engage with the press. He's somebody who likes to, go back and forth with reporters, call out fake news, as he did yesterday. Even when it appeared that the press conference was wrapping up, he got some questions on the side and continued to answer questions from other reporters who had not had a chance and continued to have side conversations and couldn't quite leave the press conference. And so that's just a characteristic, I think, of this president. He's a combative guy, and he likes to mix it up.
And tell us about the reaction within his own party. Among Democrats, he's been widely condemned for these remarks. What about within fellow Republicans?
He's been widely condemned by GOP leaders, by members of his own party, certainly critics in his own party who see this latest episode as a reinforcement of, you know, their previous beliefs of what the president stood for. Many of his former presidential rivals, people like Marco Rubio, who has been very outspoken, Senator Lindsey Graham. I will note, though, that of all of the top leadership, including Speaker Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, and even on the other side with Senator Mitch McConnell, nobody in their tweets or statements directly called out the president by name, as we've seen from maybe some of his other critics in the party. And I think that's because they don't want the president to sort of return fire or turn on them like he's done to so many people in the past who have crossed him.
We're talking to Scott Wong right now, senior staff writer at The Hill, where he focuses on Paul Ryan and House Republicans. And Scott, at that same press conference, the president also talked about protesting Robert E. Lee statue removal in Charlottesville. And here's his take.
Many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week, and is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
And what do the president's remarks do for this debate, which has been going on for a while with different results about the removal of Confederate statues?
Well, I think the important thing is what he said was he's going to let the local jurisdictions deal with this. He certainly did weigh in and say, you know, this is a slippery slope. Does this end up with statues of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson being removed? Of course, Thomas Jefferson played a big part in the founding of Charlottesville and founded the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. And of course, is a president who's had a difficult and challenging history with slavery himself. I think, you know, the president's comments, even more so, I think the actions of what took place in Charlottesville have really accelerated the removal of these statues. We've seen this happen. Protesters tore down a Confederate statue in North Carolina this week in the wake of Charlottesville. Just overnight, we saw three statues ordered to come down, three Confederate statues ordered to come down in Baltimore. And so, you know, other cities, other jurisdictions and states are looking to Charlottesville and saying, we don't want this same sort of violent clash to happen in our community. We're going to try to be proactive and get out in front of this.
Now, some African-American members of Congress have said it's time for the statues to go. Do you have a sense that there could be any legislation coming, or right now is this something that's just being talked about?
I think we're seeing a lot of statements. Obviously, Democrats in particular are pretty fired up over what's happened the past few days. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus have called for Confederate statues to be removed from the U.S. Capitol. There are, I think, 9 total statues of Confederate figures, everyone from, including, I would say, Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy and his vice president. But we're not hearing anything about legislation that would change the rules or the laws. Basically, the way it works is each state under current law gets to send 2 statues to the U.S. Capitol. And so if those states wanted to replace those Confederate statues, they certainly could do so. And I think that would happen at the state legislature and governor level. But so far, we haven't seen, and of course, members of Congress are on recess. They're back in their districts. And so the most of what we've seen are statements so far, and we're not expecting a whole lot of action on this issue until maybe they get back in September.
And Scott, it was a really bad weekend for the country. 3 dead in Charlottesville. We had the president's remarks. They created a big reaction yesterday and over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Is this the end, or are there more shoes waiting to drop?
You know, I think the biggest shoe that's dropped in the wake of Charlottesville has been these CEOs who have served on President Trump's economic councils on his manufacturing council. This started with the CEO earlier this week of Merck, who resigned, saying that the president's remarks in response to Charlottesville were inadequate, and it's just continued to spiral with a number of other CEOs dropping out from Trump's advisory councils. These are, you know, mainly these councils don't do too much, but it's more symbolic when you have CEOs from major corporations like GE and Under Armour and Merck basically distancing themselves from the president. It's not a good place to be for the White House. And so I think more than any statements that we've seen from members of Congress, the real action that has occurred in the wake of Charlottesville has come from corporate America.
We're talking to Scott Wong right now, a senior staff writer at The Hill, for our weekly recap of national politics.
And you can weigh in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think of the resignation of a bunch of CEOs from these presidential advisory councils, which were then dissolved after those defections? What do you think of the response to what happened this weekend in Charlottesville from the president, from his critics, and from his supporters? And what news are you watching for out of the nation's capital? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
More to come here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're looking at this week in Washington with Scott Wong. He's a senior staff writer at The Hill.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Call in with your reactions to this weekend's events, to the president's reactions and statements. And there have been questions about Republicans possibly who might run a primary campaign against President Trump. Is that something you'd like to see happen? If so, who should run? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Well, go ahead and take a caller now. We've got Tom first in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. An interesting discussion. My points would be in relating to the statues and the controversies that arise from statues of Confederate leaders and such. I do not view it in the terms of being racist or I look at it completely from the CSA, the Confederate States of America, being a traitorous. They're traitors. These people seceded from the Union. They had separate trade deals. They had elected leadership. They did all sorts of things. And, you know, despite the fact that some of their generals were outstanding, West Point educated, extremely smart tacticians, these people fought for an enemy that declared war on the United States of America.
Tom, thank you for that call. And Scott, there are different strands of thinking about these statues. Some people saying as monuments of history, leave them up, but put in context. We had a guest yesterday from Columbia University who said maybe there's nothing wrong with the statues themselves, but where are the statues, where are the monuments to slaves and other figures representing the full spectrum of history? And then we've heard from other people like Tom who say that the Confederate statues memorialize traitors to our country. What is the thinking right now on this?
I think it's an interesting debate. I think some of the concerns about why communities want to remove statues have to do with African-American people who walk by these statues every day, that they are a constant reminder of them, of slavery, of what happened in this country. I don't think anyone is saying we need to, completely deny what happened in the country. I think the argument is that, let's put these statues in, the argument that we're hearing from most folks in Washington is let's put these statues in a museum. Let's not deny what took place in this country, but to put it in a public square like that, where people are reminded of that, the tragedy of slavery and the original sin of slavery, it may be a little bit too much for people to bear.
Thanks a lot, Tom. And we'll go next to Katie, joining us from Lake Mills. Katie, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for this great discussion. My concern is just that we need to educate people about the rise of Nazism in the 1920s and 30s that led up to World War II. My dad fought in World War II. He was in the bloodiest battle, and he was gravely injured, and he went there to fight the rise of Hitler and make a stand in the world that the world is not going to stand for this. We stand on the side of humanity. And I don't think people really remember that the conditions were exactly the same as we're facing today with the employment situation and targeting groups of people and blaming them for the way the economy is. I think this is what this is all about, and we have to educate people. And I'm really glad to see that the public exerted enough pressure on these CEOs who came out today especially and resigned their position, because in the wake of the Citizens United decision, ordinary people really don't have as much influence as our founders intended.
Katie, thank you for that call. And Katie talking about her father fighting in World War II, fighting against the rise of the Nazis and Hitler. And that's something that was echoed in a response of Bernie Sanders, right? Scott?
I'm not familiar with Bernie Sanders.
I believe in a tweet he said it was embarrassing. I'm paraphrasing, but embarrassing, you know, the memory of those who died to fight the Nazis.
Oh, certainly. I mean, there are, thousands and thousands of Americans went over to Germany and other parts of the world to fight the Nazis, and many of them lost their lives. And I think there was a very memorable tweet from Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, who said, my brother lost his life during World War II fighting for Nazis. You know, why are we having this? Why are we having this political debate so many years and decades later? Obviously, that was a painful part of history for all people, because that was World War II, and no matter where you were in the world at that time, you were impacted by it. And so it is a strange time in our political history that we are revisiting many of these issues that a lot of people thought were well in the past.
And Scott, as our time gets a little shorter here, I want to ask you about a couple of other stories. Politico published a story on Monday that said President Obama had been warned about Russian attempts to meddle in Western democracies. What do we know about that story and what the Obama administration did or did not do?
Well, based on that reporting, it seems that intelligence agencies had been warning the president and his administration about Russia's disinformation campaign and efforts to disrupt the U.S. political system in the final years of Obama's presidency. That would be, between 2014 and 2016. And so it raises questions about, whether whether President Obama and his people did all they could to try to stop some of these cybersecurity threats that we know today, did have an impact on the 2016 election. Russia clearly tried to influence the election, and President Trump just this week seized on that report and tweeted saying that Obama ignored the warnings because he didn't want to anger Russia. So President Trump looking for any sort of angle here to blame the president and take maybe some of the pressure, some of the political heat off himself as he faces his own Russia investigation.
And finally, Scott, another story. You've been thinking about 2020 and currently Trump's approval rating, 34% right now, the lowest that it's been yet. And the New York Times has reported that there is a so-called shadow campaign forming for 2020. And I don't think anyone has declared for this. No one has said, yes, I'm willing to run in a primary against the president. But, what are the odds that that could be the case?
I think the odds are pretty low that somebody could successfully primary President Trump. He has, he has a strong base among conservatives and within the Republican Party. However, I think you are seeing some jockeying and some positioning even in 2017. Here we are 3 years out by a number of people. You know, Ben Sasse, in the Senate, Nebraska Senator, Jeff Flake, and Arizona Senator, both are very big critics of the president. And use every opportunity to sort of pounce on his missteps. Obviously, a former presidential rival and centrist Republican, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, would love for another shot to take on Trump. And, you know, I mean, we may even see somebody, a celebrity, given the rise of President Trump in the last election, how he was able to knock off so many very well-accomplished politicians, we may see a celebrity, somebody like Mark Cuban, the businessman and entrepreneur.
Yeah, and you say Dwayne The Rock Johnson, maybe?
Well, I think we're having some fun there. But you know, I mean, we're talking about Kid Rock possibly running for the Senate. And so in the age of Trump, I would say anything is possible, and there's no idea too silly given what's transpired in the country over the last year and a half.
So, you know, Mike Pence, that was floated, was it a week ago? Maybe Mike Pence was running one of these shadow campaigns, but he has said kind of absolutely not. Would that be considered kind of high treason among the Trump campaign if Pence were to be thinking about that?
Yeah, I think Pence is being very cautious about how he's being perceived by the president and the president's closest allies. He wants to appear in lockstep with the president. But at the same time, he would be the preferred favorite candidate if Trump were to, for some reason, step aside or have to resign his office. Obviously, everyone would look to Mike Pence, the vice president, to step up in his place. And so Mike Pence, it's interesting, as you mentioned, is returning home from a trip to South America. He's returning home early amid this latest controversy over Charlottesville. I think he wants to appear that he's not detached from the situation, but trying to stay on top of it and also to be supporting his president.
Scott, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Scott Wong's a senior staff writer at The Hill, where he focuses on House Republicans, and he joined us for a weekly look at the top stories in national politics.